Thank you for listening to the Antelope Island State Park Podcast. My name is Madison, and today we're going to talk about what I've termed free park bison drama, how the formation of Antelope Island State Park and the bison herd were intertwined. As discussed by Trish, the park's naturalist, back in December in episode 31, the bison population on Antelope Island started off with only 12 bison. But in order to maintain a healthy genetic diversity, bison are frequently rotated in and out of the herd. After listening to the article, I wondered, did the park come first and the bison were second? What happened in order to get bison onto the island? But as it turns out, the bison were here long before Antelope Island was a state park. The bison herd was originally brought to Utah by William Glassman, who kept them not on the island itself, but just south of the Great Salt Lake. He quickly moved the herd onto Antelope Island in 1893 because the bison were breaking fences, escaping, and just wreaking havoc on neighbors' farms. John E. Dooley Sr. acquired the herd in 1889, and by 1911, there were 100 individual bison on the island. In the early 20th century, the majority of Antelope Island was privately owned and was farmed or used as grazing land, and a majority of that land was owned by the Island Improvement Company. John Dooley's son, also named John Dooley, took over the Island Improvement Company in 1915 and brought sheep to the island. Dooley Jr. had big plans for the bison, as he claimed that Antelope Island was a much better environment for bison than Yellowstone was, where there was already a healthy herd. The island acted as a, quote, native barrier, in his words, where they could be monitored. Dooley Jr. advocated for the herd in local newspapers. In the Salt Lake Telegram, a decades-long evening edition to the Salt Lake Tribune, Dooley Jr. was quoted as saying, "It is to the American Bison Society that all the credit must be given for putting the buffalo in this country on a safe footing for the future. The original herds in all three national parks have been gifts to the government." Okay, so here is where we might need some background information on bison in the early years of the 20th century. Bison at that point had been hunted to near extinction, and the threat of bison having the same fate as the passenger pigeon or the dodo was concerning to many people. And here is where we meet Ernest Harold Baines and William T. Hornaday. Baines was a writer and a naturalist, and Hornaday was an early species collector for the Smithsonian. The two founded the American Bison Society in 1904 and began operation in 1905. As a fun side note, President Theodore Roosevelt was honorary president of the society. The society was established to raise public awareness and save bison from extinction. Work between Yellowstone Park and private owners of herds was undertaken for breeding, and bison were sold and traded across the states and up into Canada. The society disbanded in 1935 because the society itself decided that bison were no longer at risk of extinction. Back to our main story. In 1920, Dooley, with the Island Improvement Company, leased land to Ellison Land and Livestock Company. There's a lot of companies and islands in this episode. The lease included 400 bison, presumably brought in from outside of the island, as Antelope Island probably only had about 100 to 200 individuals. The bison were intended to be raised alongside cattle for commercial purposes, for their meat, fur, etc. The Salt Lake Tribune reported in June of 1920 that plans were to, quote, "transform Antelope Island into the finest cattle growing and cattle fattening ranch in the entire Western country," unquote. It was also during this time that the livestock company attempted to rename the island Buffalo Island, and articles of agreement were apparently filed with the Secretary of State in August of that year. That name change was not permanent and possibly not even formally accepted, as newspaper articles to follow used both Buffalo and Antelope Island for the next couple of years. After only 2 months of trying to raise cattle and bison together, it was found that it was not going to work, which in my book is one of the worst buyer's remorse situations I've ever heard of. It was reported that bison would sometimes kill young cattle, and yes, they would still continue to break through fences. Like I said, multiple people and organizations were against issuing permits, and one of the organizations was the Salt Lake Commercial Club, a private, quote, "business club for gentlemen," as the history reads. The Salt Lake Commercial Club urged the Livestock Commission to take action, but the commission made it clear that it did not have authority to intervene. The Salt Lake Triangle Club resolved to purchase the entire herd on the island, but were unable to coordinate with the Department of the Interior and there was very little information past that declaration. Utah Representative Milton Holmes Welling proposed a bill to purchase Antelope Island and the herd, and it stirred up public opinion completely. But there was no action taken, no decision really made. Chief of the National Biological Survey, Dr. E.W. Nelson, was reported as saying, quote, "The dark day of the bison has passed," unquote. Though he also stated that he regrets the announced decision of the owner of the herd to turn the finds over to sportsmen. In researching this, I was very on the side of go save the bison, make it into a park, blah, blah, whatever. But it's important to note that even if someone or some organization did end up buying the herd, they would probably have to keep them somewhere else. And that would require a much bigger project than just buying the herd itself. So clearly, on the island, bison and human interests were clashing. So unless the entire island was designed for bison, the herd would most likely have to be transferred somewhere else. And finally, one of the most interesting advocates for the herd to me was the acting director of the National Park Service, Arno B. Kammerer. Published correspondence from the president of the American Humane Society to Kammerer recommended that the bison should be cared for in a game preserve, or to establish a game preserve on the island itself. In December 1920, the acting director of the Park Service, Kammerer, wrote to the secretary of the State Livestock Board, Thomas Redmond, in which he states that the governor of Iowa was hosting a state park convention in January, and he does so hope that Redmond would send Utah representatives to learn about establishing state parks in order to provide a, quote, "natural breeding place for bison," unquote. In the correspondence, Kammerer also suggests that purchasing the rest of the island would cost approximately $500,000, which is just over $7.5 billion today, which does not include the purchase of the herd. Kammerer notes that the owners were eager to sell, but laments who could come up with that money. Kammerer was not the first person to suggest a national park or preserve. He was the first person of note that we have in suggesting that the island could become a state park. Utah Governor George H. Dern was skeptical of purchasing the island, and he was quoted in the Salt Lake Tribune as saying, quote, "The bison is an American animal, and all sections should be as much interested in preserving them as Utah should. What would be the spirit with which the citizens of the state receive announcement of that action?" Unquote. Meaning purchasing the animals with state funds. When, he said, "the need of the state university and other state institutions for new buildings," which I did not paraphrase. That's just a weird way of writing. And that is a very good point. State governments are often caught between balancing the needs of their citizens with balancing wildlife. And as former Governor Duren mentioned, it is an American animal, not a Utah animal. As a side note, many articles referenced here are alongside mentions of Zion's or Grand Canyon National Park. So the economic benefit of a park in the area was recognized by people at the time and recognized by government employees, leaders, and publishers. Similar proposals to buy up the herd were brought up year after year, and usually it was after herd owners had sold rights to shoot a number of the herd. Governor Dern received letters and protests from governors and mayors outside of the state and from the Humane Society. But as a surprisingly beautifully written article by Time put it in November of 1926, in parentheses, the governor, could, quote, "only reply, Antelope Island buffalo herd are privately owned," unquote. This story was fascinating to me because it's interesting to see how the status of an individual or an entity, how that status can shape its fate, whether the species is endangered or thriving, whether they're privately owned or owned by a state entity or a national entity. And at the time, bison were not considered to be at risk of extinction. They could be easily identified as pests or as treasures. Today, we love our Antelope Island bison, and many people work very hard to keep them healthy and happy. But it's also not difficult to see how if we were ranchers trying to raise cattle on the island, the bison would pose a huge threat. Where we're ending for now is that the licenses were issued and carried out. Only about 50 bison were left after 250 or so were killed in 1926. There was, of course, more bison drama up until Antelope Island became a state park. And I don't know, maybe there is still some bison drama. The early 20th century Utah was a dynamic time for deciding what state parks should be. One of my favorite pieces to read was from David M. Welling of the Welling Travel Agency, and I was unable to determine if David was a descendant of Congressman Welling. I don't know. But in 1959, Welling sent a telegram, which I guess were still in use back then. He sent a telegram to Senator Bennett and Governor George D. Clyde, who were about to embark on some rebuilding project for the Saltaire. Welling argued that Utah should abandon the Saltaire project, as, quote, "the roller coaster dance hall is a thing of the past," unquote. Which, yeah, it is. But the state should create a much larger park on Antelope Island, which would, quote, "lead eventually to an Antelope Island State Park, and then to a national park." The potential future state park, he wrote, should, quote, "provide golf, tennis, archery ranges, ice skating, a wildlife park, a pioneer village, and lodging." So clearly, the idea of a state park was still developing. Park was finally established on the island in 1969, and the modern Antelope Island State Park opened to the public in 1993. In retrospect, it's clear to me how the future of the bison herd and the formation of Antelope Island were destined to be intertwined. Almost all of the resources used in this episode were taken directly from contemporary articles from Utah's own newspapers, like the Salt Lake Tribune, the Ogden Evening Standard, and Deseret News. Thank you very much for listening to Antelope Island State Park Podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and tell a friend. And if you don't, tell me. Send me a note at tackley@utah.gov and let me know what you'd like to hear more about. All articles referenced in this episode can be found on newspapers.lib.utah.edu between the years of 1912 and 1959. Park information and conditions can be found on our website at antelopeisland.utah.gov. Find us on Facebook at Antelope Island SP, on Instagram at Antelope Island State Park, all one word, on Twitter at Antelope Island SP, and you can search for us on YouTube. See you on the island soon.